Hello, and welcome to Dice Punks, a tabletop role-playing podcast where we focus on playing full campaigns in less well-known systems. This week, however, I have staged a coup in order to allow Adam to play, at last, as a character in Greg Stolze's Unknown Armies 2nd Edition. Hi, I'm Dez, and I'll be your needlessly ominous GM for today, and for however long this little mishap lasts.
Hi, I'm Adam, and I'll be playing Mia Farrell, a grizzled elder punk librarian.
Hi, I'm Drew, and I'll be playing Benjamin Demos, a man who is crisp unto menace.
Hi, I'm Robin, and I'll be playing Danny Aikalos, the Dreamboat lead singer.
Hi, I'm Nick, and I will be playing George, who's kind of a towering meat pile and also an ex-cult member.
Towering meat pile is
belongs,
a work of art.
Yeah, no, that's a phrase that really needs to go into Drew's game.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
if listeners have not heard Meat Punks, it has some meat piles. They don't tower very long if our players have anything to say about it, though.
True enough.
We do knock a lot of things over, it's true. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so this is our first session of Unknown Armies. So for the listeners, here is a bit of a brief on the system and how it works. The system advertises itself as a role-playing game of postmodern urban horror. It is set in approximately 20 Mumbleteen, and the dice mechanics first are 2d10s. It's a d percentile system in which the players are trying to roll under their stats, body, speed, mind, or soul, respectively, or the skills that they have allocated beneath those stats, depending on the intensity or severity of the check necessary. Because it is 2d10s, it's possible to roll matches, that is to say 11, 22, 33, etc. And depending on whether those are successes or failures, they're like that, but more so. Certain situations, be they the character's central obsession skill or certain fear, rage, or noble passions defined on their character sheets, may allow for swapping the tens and the ones places in certain scenarios. Otherwise, the major mechanic to be aware of is, because this is a horror game, there are madness meters, but instead of being one central sanity score as a one-stop shop, as it were, the madness meters in Unknown Armies are broken out into hardened notches and failed notches within the categories of violence, the unnatural, helplessness, isolation, and self. Hardened notches take you more sociopathic, you care a bit less about the triggers. Failed notches tend to take you a bit more histrionic, and the only way to win is not to play. As to the world that we are working in particular, as mentioned, it is approximately 20 Mumbleteen, a few years after the second Great Fire in Chicago reduced large swaths of the north side of the city, centered in Lakeview, but with devastation extending as far as south as Old Town, as far north as Andersonville, and as far west as Mayfair, to little more than ash and ruined buildings. Other major differences between this world that we are telling you about, dear listeners, and the one that we more routinely inhabit are the replacements of three major U.S. cities with, well, other similar cities. These are New Forth, where New York might be instead, a city with dichotomies built into the architecture of its arcologies, and signifiers of privilege, including regular access to sunlight. There's New Cherbourg in place of New Orleans, where the waters never receded after a great hurricane, and where life continues out in the swamp. And San Cayetan, a tech bust town that took all of San Francisco's economic downturns at once, and struggles to continue in the aftermaths. Before we dive into that, though, let's see what the players might be doing on a normal Tuesday afternoon. Adam, Nia, let's start with you.
So, I run a sort of southern Bronzeville library education center, strategically named the Freedom Library Center, that because I segued into that career from doing punk music in my greater youth, does have a small but reasonably well-outfitted recording studio. I don't know if it's reasonable that we'd be having band practice on a Tuesday night or not. I'll leave that to my bandmates. But probably regardless, I'm in the studio because if it's Tuesday afternoon, it's probably pretty slow, you know, for at least part of that that time. And I have a little bit of time to go practice around. Now, if my bandmates want it to be band practice, then, well, we can jump right into that.
I think I'm around whether you want me to be or not. In the corner, there is a rail-thin, milk-pale man with side-slicked, all but black hair, glasses so thick that they look opaque unless you look at them dead-on, which you can't at the moment, because his back would have been to you as he messes with a vast modular synth and probably polishes Nia's bass compulsively as well whenever it is not being played.
I am running late.
So it is band practice, but you're not there yet. I see.
Which may be why my bass is not being actively used. Chances are good I'm actually fiddling with like amps, effects pedals, or maybe like doing some tracking work on our digital audio workstation. If you looked at me, see a let's say like formerly tall and lanky, but now somewhat softer shaped fellow with kind of short wavy salt and pepper hair, wearing Levi's work boots and a reasonably tight black work shirt with beat up black plastic rim glasses, and I'm twiddling with some audio kind of recordings that we've maybe taken over the last couple of band practices and trying to get it to sound just so.
So you're late, Danny. Is there a reason for this? By what means are you getting there?
My mom is dropping me off. So she had to grab her shoes and then her purse and then her sunglasses and seemingly forgot half a dozen things before we got out the door. But gradually, after much coaxing and urging her, we arrived and I slide out the passenger seat, though not before she pushes a water bottle into my hands.
All right. And meanwhile, in an entirely different time zone, what would you be up to, Nick?
Yeah, George, on a typical Tuesday afternoon, is toiling away at the warehouse for a gigantic soulless corporation. He doesn't love the work, but it's work. There's an older colleague that a box almost falls him in, and George puts his hand out and stops it, warns the guy to be more careful, and carries half the load.
All right. So, you may note that I have spoken of what you would be doing. Because here's where you are instead.
Always a promising start.
It's going so well.
You're in a living room. You're in, like, the platonic form of a semi-formal living room. It's fairly large. 15-ish feet on a side. There are multiple couches. There's a fireplace. There's sort of postmodernly placeless art on the walls, which are not actually beige. They're this sort of soft seafoam green. Tasteful, understated. You'll forget about it once you leave. And each of you looks around and sees that there are four other figures in the room of varying degrees of familiarity, depending on who you are. There isn't really a door so much as a hallway that goes off to either side of one wall. None of you are really sitting in places where you can see without getting up to go look around. Reactions.
One of these again.
Hearing you talk, I probably... Danny? Oh.
Yeah.
Were you here all along?
Yep. Sup. How you doing?
You've been here before.
Oh, no, not here. It's, I'm clearly asleep.
Nope. Got nothing. I'm gonna get up and start, like, looking around the room to try to see if I can figure out how I got here or where I am.
It is a room. Do you go out to look in down either of the hallways?
Not just yet.
You do recognize your two bandmates and some dude.
Oh.
Having not said anything yet, I turn to the some dude and say, first time.
With this particular experience, yeah. Is it you? Do I owe you some money for this?
This is an experience I would very much like to monetize, but no, I'm as surprised as you are.
Oh, yeah, no, I've got no memory of how I got here, but I assume that it was poison of some sort.
While I am looking around the periphery of the room without quite leaving it, I'm going to kind of speak up over my shoulder and be like, so are you in the library too?
As rarely as possible.
All right, well...
I shudder visibly.
Also, George, you may recognize these folks.
Wait a minute. I've seen your YouTube account. Are you... No.
This is the most unnerved I've been so far.
Oh my... Nia? Benjamin? Danny? Is that...
Yeah.
Oh my god.
What was the count when you saw the video?
Oh, I mean, it was only 94, and I was confused why it was only counting my views.
Ah. So you're the one who's been watching The Love Is Shoegaze, but it's Dream Pop.
Yes. Oh my god. I mean... I don't want to say it changed me. I don't want to be a fanboy here, but it speaks to me. Let's say that.
I was really proud of the lyrics with that one, because it kind of talks about the experience of being out of your body, but also acutely aware of your body at the same time, you know?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Benji and Danny, roll notice.
Okay.
So for you and for the listeners, you are yes. Rolling the 2d10s, and you are looking for under 25 or under 60, since this is not a high-pressure situation.
I got 67, so okay. Oops.
If the first one's a 10, is that a 0 in this system? Or is that...
No, 0 is... So
my D10s go 1 through 10. So if sure. I roll a 10, yeah.
So if you have one color that is the tens place and one color yes. that is the ones place. If the correct. Tens place is a 0, then you are looking at single digits. You know,
understood. Okay. Then I rolled 8.
Okay. The fourth figure that I mentioned, you see only out of the corner of your eye, is sort of a silhouette in blue that seems like he probably is trying to speak and just not getting through. You may also now want to roll an unnatural check.
So this is against your mind stat.
So you really would probably want to roll under 70 for this.
21 for me.
Cool. That sure is weird. Take a hardened notch.
All right, then. It is, for the record, weird.
I guess while this is going on, I'm still hung up on the fact that anybody has watched our YouTube channel. And I'm approaching our fan here and being like, so hang on, how did you find our channel? What were you like doing? What were you searching for? Is this for market research, I guess?
I mean, I was searching for meaning, and it would almost, it's kind of like the music found me.
Right.
It looks like that's not what you were asking. Was that not what you were asking?
It's all good. I think probably you and Danny are going to communicate a lot better than you and me will.
I would love at some point to collect some demographic information about you.
Sure, I'm an open book.
The search for meaning is a long, unending road in which the journey sometimes matters far more than that destination that may never come. I should write that down.
Oh, yeah.
Benji, you hear. The other three of you roll notice to see if you hear.
All right. For me, I'm looking for under 15.
I got 53.
All right, well, my 45 is above my notice of 15, but below my mind of 60.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, yeah, below my mind.
You're just looking for below mind here. You do hear, and you see the figure speaking, Drew. I apologize, listeners. I'm going to be terrible about referring to people by their given names and also by their character names. It's just going to happen. But, Benji, you hear the figure speaking. No one else quite notices where the sound is coming from. Definitely hope that end doesn't come. Yeah? Yeah.
Does anyone else hear a certain yammering about ends and whether they're arriving?
I do.
What now?
I point at the figure and offer no further explanation.
I turn and look for the first time at this figure.
You don't see him square on, but as you are turning your head, you catch a glimpse of the same blue sparks outlining the figure of a man, probably.
I ask the blue spark man, are you a fan as well?
Sorry, fan of?
Well, music generally, ours specifically.
I'm pretty sure I've never heard your band. This is not a commentary on your fame or notoriety so much as I don't get out much these days.
Out of here?
Complicated. Not permit. And then he cuts off.
My eyes sparkle at the word complicated.
At about this time, from one of the disappearing into hallway, sort of gaps in the walls, there enters a tall, anachronistically, imperially dressed black man with military medals that you don't recognize and a glare that could strip paint, followed by an effete courtier who looks like he might have just stepped out of Versailles, except that his eyes seem old enough to have seen humans invent fire. The two of them enter, the latter carrying an elaborate tea set, or tea service rather, with cups for four of you. This is set down upon the table, tea is served, and a fifth cup is poured, but it's not something visible. And you are each offered tea.
I will accept a cup of tea, but I will not be drinking it.
I immediately drink it.
What kind of tea do you like?
Want to say black tea, anything that's got more caffeine than it has any business having.
And you, Danny?
I like those Monster Energy teas.
I didn't know those exist. I am now duly horrified. Pardon me while I take a stress check myself.
The horror is leaking out.
So it's black tea. It could fuel an engine. There's an interesting sort of citrus note to it. It's rather nice. Another cup appears. Yeah, so you look away from the tea surface, you look back, there is an additional teacup there, and the courtier is pouring it and offering it to the military man, who sort of shrugs it off with a dismissive gesture, and so the courtier then takes it for himself. He sits down, the other does not.
I dip a finger into my teacup to see if there's anything but liquid. Leaves that could be red.
There are some small bits of tea. You might have to drink it all first to properly read a pattern in the bottom. But it is definitely liquid that you've stuck your finger into. Good job.
Excellent.
You get an askance look from the courtier. The military man addresses you all, first thanking everyone for your prompt attendance of his summons, and thanking, you don't hear the name, you just hear an R at the front, for his hospitality. He glances at, for two of you, empty space, for two of you, where the blue outline would be standing, and just purses his lips and continues. My name is more important, more consequential, and one you will forget once you return it to me. That is, after all, why I have called you here. Someone has stolen my name, and may be attempting to bend reality by using it. I am prepared to offer you two questions and one reasonably scoped desire in payment for its and then reality judders. It passes like a shockwave over the room, or a cloudburst. There is a name uttered from all points of origin, and the room shakes. Three teacups and a saucer shatter. A window that you hadn't noticed before on one of the walls falls open from the top, drawing a gasp from the man whose name started with R. The man whose name has apparently been stolen when you look back to him, has been knocked to one knee, and the carpet is smoking where his hands clutch it. Go. It is no longer safe for you to be here. The house will send you where you need to be, or at least somewhere nearby. Get me back my name. And then you're not there anymore. There is not so much an interstitial blank whiteness as just you feel like you may have blinked without actually having closed your eyes, and you're in an office building now. There's dust. You're not really in a cubicle, but it's not like not a cubicle. It's one of those like the walls go to the ceiling, but there aren't windows. It's on the interior side of the hallway, as it were, as if, you know, a potter sort of pressed thumbs into the walls and created shitty workspaces. There are a variety of documents. There are a couple of computers that are at least 6 years out of date, even taking into account company computing budgets. You're not in the house anymore.
So I was looking the entire time that these fancy people were talking to us like I was itching, like my whole body inside and out, like was just like tingling, and now I'm looking around and having the exact same reaction. Okay.
Anyone who feels it's appropriate may want to roll an unnatural check.
Yeah, I don't have any hardens in that, so I probably need to roll that. 36.
Oh, man. I rolled above my mind.
All right. Harden.
43.
Freeze, frenzy, or flee.
A freeze.
Okay.
I rolled a 59.
All right. So I took a hardened there.
And what stat are we checking against? I'm sorry.
Mind.
Mind. Thank you.
Also, just for the reader's amusement, it may be worth noting that everyone's stats get a descriptor appended to them. This is one of my favorite features of the system, even though it has absolutely no mechanical value. But what is everyone's mind descriptor?
DIY intelligentsia.
Mensa kid.
Sharp tack.
Irrelevant.
I'm very glad you went last. That was very funny.
So did anyone other than Danny fail?
I failed.
Okay, freeze, frenzy, or flee?
Freeze.
Okay. So Nia and Benji, you were the two that have agency for the moment. Also, for those who succeeded, mark a hardened notch. Mm-hmm. Those who failed, mark a failed notch.
And this would be an unnatural, yes?
Correct. Yes. Weird shit is obviously happening to you.
I am sort of looking at everybody, noting who was frozen, and then focusing on Benjamin and the... Do you have any idea where we are, other than hell?
Some sort of hell, yes. I walk over to one of the computers and see if it'll turn on.
Yes. The computer does fire up. You hear the obnoxious cord of a certain operating system powering on. And... you get a login screen.
Some sort of hell, yes. There's never a way out, but there's always a way through.
Well, I hope you're right. I didn't have a chance to lock up the library. I don't have my bag. No, it's fine. We just got to figure out where we are.
Are the other two alive?
Hmm? Yeah, sorry.
Good.
Straightest line through a problem sometimes. It's cool. I've been in worse spots.
I think you've got this. And I think I've got this. Is the computer continuing to do things?
There's a login screen.
Let's see.
Can I roll hunches to see about a password? It's a 20, so it'd have to be a pretty good roll.
If you want to have a look around, I will instead let you roll paperwork.
Yes, I think I would love to do that.
For reference, dear listeners, paperwork is Benjamin's obsession skill, meaning that he has reasonably heavily invested in it, and whenever he so desires, he can flip the tens and ones places of anything he rolls for it.
Didn't have to in this case. Paperwork is at 50, and I rolled a 45.
Very nice. You, in fact, find a post-it note taped to the back of the monitor that the ink is graying with age. That gives, you know, an 8-digit, obviously a date password with ABC as the letters involved. It's terrible.
In hell, there will be wanting OPSEC, I say as I type the password.
you get the cord of you are continuing to log in. The clock reads about 2 hours earlier than you departed from Chicago, assuming it's the same day. An email program starts up, as do six windows of browser. One of them pops up with the United States Patent and Trademark Office's website. One of them pops up with Westlaw. One of them pops up with Google News.
I grin like a wolf.
Any good news in all that?
Well, hell might be on the West Coast. No surprise there.
The problem is that isn't in Chicago, where my library and my base are.
Yes.
Any idea?
Where do we find a lost name? I start poring over the windows that are available to me. So it's 2 hours earlier. Does it seem to be when we were roughly otherwise, or is there evidence of us being elsewhen?
I'm not even going to make you roll paperwork. You look through the emails, which are very obviously business emails sent to a paralegal at a law firm that is headquartered in San Cayetan, and appears to have gone defunct 4 years ago. But it was an intellectual property firm, and the work seems to be continuing, even though the firm is not. There are several active trademark prosecutions, as well as several patent prosecutions. Sorry, not sorry.
I have good news. We're not in hell. These evils are earthly.
Well, I guess that does make it more likely we can get home. I should help these two. I reach for the go bag that isn't there. Swear no, under there. My breath. It's there.
It's there.
I squint at it for a moment, grab it, and then produce one of the three or four bottles of water that I keep in my go bag and proffer it first to Danny. Just try to, like, you know, get him to take a couple drinks of water under his own power, and then we'll offer it to our new friend.
So, Danny, You've just had the strangest dream. You were in the Master's house, and the Lord of the Cosmos spoke to you and treated the Master as a servant. And then you were shunted out of it, and it takes you, really, until you are prodded in the nose with the top of a water bottle, to come back to yourself.
I blink, and I attempt to... Can I try to go back to that dream with attuned lucidity?
You can try.
Okay.
That was actually...
So I got 44. Attune lucidity is 40, so I can't do the flippy thing.
No, but you do get a free point in it, yeah. So it's 41 now.
Mm-hmm.
However,
the dice hate me today.
For what it's worth, in Unknown Armies, supernatural failures are often what makes the plot go round.
Okay. It's so true. You vanish again. We'll get back to you.
Point.
Sweet.
Point of clarification. Does the water bottle go with him?
Had you handed it to him?
I tried.
Had you taken it?
Probably with the kind of dumbfounded. Yes. Excellent. Or it'd be also funny if it just kind of drops straight down.
Nope. It goes with you.
Sweet. Okay.
So in this office, I blink twice at the spot where Danny just was, swear under my breath again and get another bottle out, open it and try to proffer it to our new friend here, our fan.
At this point, do you think you were all hardened enough to not worry about someone blipping out of existence again? Or are we going to treat this? I will offer you all input on this, since I am throwing a whole bunch of checks at you all at once. George clarified that he was quietly having a panic attack standing there, so not really paying attention to who is or isn't blipping in and out.
Indeed. And for me, my first encounter with the supernatural was watching somebody disappear while they tried to shoot up. So this is probably one of those things that, like, I may end up needing a check for,
but not now. Sure.
Yeah, my take on my character is that I'm in like the same mode that I would go into during like a police riot, you know, and just kind of like focused in. And trying to get George to drink some water.
Yeah. And, you know, we'll say then that Benjamin is engrossed in emails.
I'm engrossed in emails and also already hardened to 3 for unnatural. So
the sample unnatural check for 3 is realize that a vision you had of the future has come true. So, plausible.
Mm. Yeah.
You may never have to worry about people disappearing again. Except that they've disappeared again.
Right, but I don't have to worry about it. As I'm combing through the depths of this sort of legal demonry, does anything jump out?
Would you say that your character has any familiarity whatsoever with intellectual property and how it works, specifically trademark and patent?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
An autodidact for the law, but would have had no reason to have encountered these particular aspects of the law.
Okay. Then, you know, they're trademarking names, which, you know, maybe, sure, plausible. And there are a number of patents that roll paperwork, actually.
Sure. I can do that. 37.
Okay, so the fact of these applications is a little bit weird. You may have seen memes on the internet about method for petting a cat. as a patent or something similar to that. These are what would happen if you had the most snub-nosed engineers that you could imagine describing magic. Method for converting lead into gold. You know, method for summoning spirits of the air. And these are going to email addresses at the USPTO. And they're getting office actions, and it looks like a whole procedure. And you note also that the dates that this has been happening are all since the firm ostensibly ceased to be.
Do any of them specifically concern the siphoning of names or identities? Is there a patent on a magic to do that sort of thing?
No.
Damn.
The closest that you get is a device for the creation of metaphysically binding contracts.
I don't know that you've found this, but inexplicably my blood pressure spikes when you read that.
Are you trying to rouse George by offering him water?
Yeah, and sort of like, if that isn't an immediately effective thing and focusing his attention, I'll be like, you know, trying to kind of talk, you know, in like a low monotone, ask simple questions, just kind of like, you know, bring his attention back to the present.
It takes a bit, but you are gradually able to do so. And with apologies to Nick having just brought you back out of your current status, we are going to swap to Danny for a moment. You're in the Matrix. There's a blank white everywhere, all around you. And what's the first thing you think of?
My friends that I left in the other space.
Oh, good. So cell phones. And in fact, what sort of hoves into view, existence, your surroundings, whatever you want to think of it as, because metaphors are weird. Have you ever seen a server room for like the operation of telephones in like a college or like a city?
I don't think Danny has, no.
Fair. I was also asking as to Robin.
Oh, kind of.
So they are immense, just rows upon rows of switches connected by wires.
Oh, yeah. Like the John Wick switchboard phones.
Yeah.
Mm.
That, instead of, you know, Matrix-y, you know, racks of guns or whatever, is what shunts itself into being all around you. And someone outlined in blue, you can see now that the outline is sort of a constriction, a restriction. He's a little bit taller than you. Actually, how tall are you? I should actually check that. You don't specify. How tall are you?
Let's say like 6'2".
Okay, slightly shorter than you. redhead, athletic build, seems to have slightly paranoiac eyes darting around everywhere, cataloging the exits that aren't there. Wait, how the hell did you get... Shit. Where were... No, you may not know. We all got booted out of the house. You had a few minutes, and then now you're here? Don't ask me where here is. It's in between. It doesn't functionally matter. Listen, I can't tell you much. I'm bound.
Are you the name stealer?
Not willingly. Don't give people your names. Use an alias. Call yourself something else. If you've read fairy stories, live by those rules for a while. Arthur may be able to help you, but avoid Mint. And with that, you are dropped out of reality. Well, no, dropped out of the Matrix as everything sort of flickers in static that has a similar effect to flame. And you're back in the office building.
I have this image.
I take a casual drink out of the bottle of water still in my hand.
I have this image of me, like, helping George drink some water when suddenly Danny is back, and I just, like, dump it.
Yeah.
And dump it in his face.
There's a slight, like, displacement of air as not very long after disappearing, Danny does, in fact, return to the space he occupied previously. Benjamin has noticed none of this because there's paperwork. Whoever was the paralegal at this desk was not very organized, but it's now to your benefit.
This is Danny reappearing. Jesus! You're back. I'm glad you're back.
Yeah, some things of note, at least in this dream space. Don't give out your name. We're going to use aliases. Mint is to be avoided, and Arthur can help us. It'll make sense later, I'm sure.
Apparently, they have some command of binding metaphysical contracts. You may call me Mustard Seed while we're here.
Okay.
Mustard Seed, yes. Mustard Seed. They mentioned, like, if you've ever, I mean, like, you know, I've encountered stuff about the Fae when I was looking up herbs. But, you know, everything that you've ever heard about them applies here. So no welcome mats.
All right. I guess.
I always thought the Fae would use an open source operating system.
I'll give a wry smile and just say, well, if we're doing aliases, for now you can call me Arin.
I'm Raven.
Okay. You can call me, and he kind of looks, an alias.
An alias.
I blink slowly. An alias it is.
That's a very good album name. We should note it for later.
I hate that you're right.
The second side of Ravenica, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. I like the ring of that.
That's deep. I cannot wait for your album to drop.
We've nearly completed two tracks.
I get a 1,000-yard stare while they're talking about this.
I start humming under my breath one of the tracks that we are working on.
Yeah, George is kind of nodding along, swaying with it. He's into it.
I believe the track in question would be If I Was Your Shoegaze Corvid, just for the record.
Mm.
That's the one.
It starts to ground George a bit further.
Good.
He says, I don't want to panic anyone, but I think that maybe there's some magic going on here.
It's okay. It seems that way, but you're just part of my dreamscape right now. So it's just dream logic that's occurring. It appears magical, but you can kind of manipulate it easier than magic, I imagine, if magic were real.
Manipulable illogic is the law, not dreams, I believe.
I wonder if that guy out back of that show ended up in an office building.
Oh, the blue outline guy is apparently, what was the word that he used again to describe his state?
Didn't he say bound?
Yes. There it is.
That's not me talking. That's just, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. No, I appreciated that because I wanted to make sure I captured it precisely. The guy that was like kind of the blue outline guy is actually a redhead and he is bound. And apparently was not willingly part of stealing the name, but appears to have done something.
Okay. Right. Well, is he still here? Maybe we can break his fingers. I don't know.
He was in the dude.
George looks
incredulous. Can't just break fingers like that, man. Jeez.
There aren't any bad ideas at this stage.
but it's worth noting that you are all four of you crammed into one person's interior, technically distinct from a cubicle.
Yeah.
My arms are crushed to my side up to, you know, like my elbows are against me, but I'm typing as though it's the most natural thing in the world. If there's a mouse, I'm not using it. I'm shortcutting around with keys.
George backs out of the space, freeing up about half of the space.
Yeah.
Given the descriptions of all of the characters, at least that, yes.
I'm going to be sort of following, not like amazingly close, but a little close behind George here.
There's a clear hallway. All of the office doors are open. All of the offices have windows, or at least something that is letting in late afternoon light.
So Colonel Mustard said they were still doing work here. I wonder if anyone's in the building. They seem like a good place to start figuring out why we're here and maybe how I can get back to my library.
Whoever was doing business here stopped doing business here before the business being done here began to be done.
I'm hefting my bag up on my shoulder and sort of scanning to see if I can tell like what floor we're on, where stairs are, anything that would help me get out of this building.
So are you looking into offices then?
Kind of poking around in the near places. I'm trying not to wander too far.
Okay. There's one office directly across the way. There's a chalk out, not a chalk outline, it's tape on the window, but the window's still whole. You think there's something off about that. And the desk is clean, there's the computer still there, but there's no paper anywhere in that office. The office one over, its door is open, but by that, the door is not actually on hinges. It is set leaning slightly against part of the wall and, in fact, covers up the only thing hung in that office, which is somebody's law school diploma.
Ooh, has it got a name on it? I'm going to go, you know, get an angle on it, see if I can get an identity here.
It has Bolt Hall College of Law, class of 1983, but the name is fuzzed out. It looks like frosted glass, but over just that part of the paper.
I'm guessing that's not how they hand them out. I'll look around
the phone rings.
God damn it. power walk over and pick it up and just say, yeah.
You hear a discordant sort of chorus of screaming that resolves first through a variety of iterations on the phrase, help me, into a dial tone.
Is anybody else, like, in my vicinity by this point?
George may still be out in the hall.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Sorry, an alias may still be out in the hall.
If I can, I'm going to, holding the dial tone to my ear, make eye contact with George and go, I hope it's a wrong number. But without putting the phone down, dial 411.
You hear the sort of click of a connection and like something is rotating and then the call cuts.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll notice that the phone is not actually plugged into the wall.
I'm probably going to have to take an unnatural check for that if I'm guessing correctly.
Yeah. Hardened one. Yeah.
Oh, good. 89. I failed.
Oof.
You know the choices.
Yeah, I'm going to frenzy and smash the receiver into the desk until I am no longer holding on to anything.
Okay.
That's how frenzy works. Cool.
So
I'm learning too.
I don't get to pick when it stops is the problem.
Yeah, so I'm going to roll Violent Protester a couple of times.
All right.
That being your struggle skill.
Indeed. Players in this system get to name their skills.
And sometimes can shuffle around how they actually work.
Yeah. So my body stats descriptor is In the Pit, and my struggle skill is Violent Protester.
Mm.
So, George...
Mm.
You hear the phone ring. You hear the phone being smashed against the desk, the wall, the window. You come into the office that Aaron is thrashing. It's the chair, incidentally, that's gone out the window. The phone is in, the receiver is in several pieces. The phone itself has now been stomped on a couple of times. And it looks like Nia is about to do something with or at the monitor. Do you have a reaction?
Yeah, I'd like to put him in a safe hold until he's calmed down a little bit. So I'd just like to give him a big ol' hug, not trying to hurt him.
Cool. If I could get you to roll... Kick Butt, Take Some Names. There will be a floor for this because you are trying to not hurt him. So you want to roll... under a 40, ideally, but you do have a body of 75.
Woohoo! I got a 34.
Cool.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Well hugged.
Nia, you are restrained and unable to take your frustrations further out on the everything.
Probably just...
You distantly hear all of this. Benjamin, do you do anything about it? Or are you still in paperwork heaven? Hell.
Purgatory?
Question mark.
Limbo.
let's just keep naming liminal supernatural spaces until one of them sticks.
Backrooms.
I mean, it is...
We are kind of in the back rooms, aren't we?
It is approximately 70% of what I do with Unknown Armies, it's true.
As Danny sort of conveyed what he learned. I've been, you know, seeing if there's anything that confluxes. I mean, am I reaching the limits of what I think I can learn from what's at hand, given that I can sort of speed read?
Probably. You do find references to... You find a couple of references to a night market. You find disparaging remarks about a church. It sounds more geographic than religious in context. And there are a couple of locations that are spoken of, but only elliptically. So it's very hard to get information on that, but it is clear that something is important there. You also do get a sense that certain parts of this undead law firm, in an organizational sense, are operated at a remove or, you know, otherwise remotely qua modernity.
I absorb the last of this information quickly and then somewhat reluctantly go to make sure that everyone is all right, as though I'm shoving the last few bites of my burrito in my mouth before going to see if the child has burned himself on the stove.
George has Nia in a big old hug that is only a bit weird because, well, you haven't known George very long.
So you're a big fan then.
George says, probably your biggest. Now, shh, it's okay. It's okay. Just calm down. Let it out. We're here.
I guess tell me when I get calm.
now's a fine time for that. You did a reasonable amount of violence and then you were restrained.
I'm take a big deep breath and sort of let it out shakily. Sorry about that. The phone rang. You all heard the phone ring.
Oh yeah, phone rang.
Okay. So
what phone?
There's a phone. It's disconnected from the wall.
At all the pieces
it's
of the phone.
Pieces, yeah. Right? Is it
yes.
Still recognizable as a phone?
In totality.
I answered it. There was voices screaming, asking for help. Then a dial tone. Tried to keep it together. Dial 411. Disconnected. Looked at it. It was never plugged in. Sorry. Kind of lost it. I'm okay now.
You can all feel a stiff breeze from the opening where the chair went out the window.
I look out the window.
You are somewhere in the neighborhood of 18 floors up.
Any recognizable landmarks?
How extensively are you traveled beyond Chicago?
Not very. I can't drive.
Mm-hmm. That said, if I get myself together enough to look out the window, it is entirely likely that I have been to most major cities at some point on tour.
You are in sort of the central dead business zone of San Cayetan.
I will relay this. I look and go, how in the hell did we get to San Cayetan? Who has cash on them?
I do
as well. What good will it do us in a haunted place?
I was thinking more about getting out of the building and finding a train, but I guess thing one is to get out of the building, and my advice, don't answer any phones. Didn't seem to do me much good. Turn and look at an alias and sort of hold out a hand and try to make eye contact and be like, thanks, sorry I let it get the best of me.
No, I mean, you help me, I help you, and you keep doing your music.
Haven't been able to stop yet. Little brief, firm handshake, and then kind of Deep breath. All right, well...
If you want to be Nick, you can be familiar with at least three of Nia's prior band projects.
I think that that is absolutely the case. I went down a rabbit hole.
Which is probably at least one more than Danny knows about.
Almost. I got to start thinking of previous band names, I guess.
Back absolutely. To the band generator.
For real.
Drop them in the chat and I'll throw them out.
So yeah, what are y'all up to now?
I guess we just got to find a way to the ground floor.
Well, and then where? Where are we going to go after that? I mean, the guy in the room before we were drugged said that there was some kind of an identity theft situation going on.
Look, we had a one-sided conversation with a pre-revolutionary French nobleman and a anachronistic Victorian army officer or something, and I am not interested in doing them any favors. I say we find a train, we get back to Chicago, and I check to make sure the library hasn't been stripped to the studs.
I mean, it's kind of common if you're in a dream for them not to have a continual plot. I don't know why I'm explaining this to other dream people, but like, if there is a plot, then it usually surfaces on its own if you just kind of keep moving around. So just...
So Raven, I super appreciate your insight on this, because this does feel really dreamlike, but... I certainly feel like me. So, if this is a dream, is there any harm in treating it like it's actually happening?
No.
I would appreciate it if we could do that.
I mean, I'll go along.
Conversely, if it is really happening and we treat it as a dream, we could, for example, plunge to our deaths.
I point at Colonel Mustard. He's got a point. But if we... I guess if they got us here, we may have to find the name to be able to get back. So, a bit... Mustard Seed. I heard some of what you found. Were you able to put anything together about why we were here specifically?
Here specifically, no. Oh, okay. It seems that what's done here is not controlled from here. I enumerate the church, the night market, whatever elliptical locations I've learned about, as though these are coming attractions of places we might be juped to at any moment.
Marvelous. I'll probably like kind of pause in whatever I was going to say and then turn to Danny and go, Raven, does this happen to you often?
Not this particular dream, but I mean, my dreams are pretty vivid, and if I go along with whatever's happening, then I might learn something.
Have we been... So, like, my dreams recur sometimes? Are you familiar with any of this? Any guidance you could give us?
Can I, is this a good attuned lucidity opportunity?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Hey, let's go. Okay. So I'm trying to roll under 41.
Yes.
It doesn't matter which order the dice go in because I just rolled a 3 and a 0.
Mm. Nice. So a 0-3 is a success, but it is not nearly so good as a success as 3-0.
Okay, we'll go for 3-0. So the closer you get to the actual skill,
yep, without going over.
The higher the number of your success is, so long as it is still a success, the greater the success it is.
Let's go 3-0 then.
So yeah, dream logic obtains, obviously. You've covered this already. You don't have many dreams where you're sort of press ganged into someone else's service. Mm-hmm. More often you have a role bestowed upon you semi-willingly, mostly. In a very "the king is dead, long live the king" sort of way.
Mm-hmm.
But there are times where you have endured travel in your dreams, And you are familiar also with quest dreams, and in those, at least for so long as you are sleeping, the dream tends to form itself around the quest so that any direction can become forward.
Mm-hmm. So, in my experience, this dream is a little bit more well put together than the ones that I'm used to. Usually there's some threads that I can pull on to unravel it and shape it, but I've had quest dreams before, and so long as we keep our path in mind, any direction becomes forward. Would not advise jumping out the window, though, as Colonel Mustard just suggested, because unless you have full control, then that would not be pleasant.
Right. As a little bit of an aside to myself, be like, yeah, no wonder you're such a good fit for One for Sorrow's vocalist.
I bow and give a little hair toss with a smile.
George, as though attempted to swoon. I do not mean to impute any sort of like sexuality to your character, but you have established yourself as a super fan.
Yeah, absolutely. So George doubles down on being stoic, and inside he is squeeing.
Marvelous.
As though it is a perfectly logical continuation of the conversation being had, I say that's a good point. Dreams are not intellectual property. They cannot be held or hoarded, given or taken, unlike names.
I'm nodding slowly, and then I'm going to kind of whirl toward Amalia.
Nia.
Yes.
In reaction to what Mustard Seed said, mm-hmm. Roll me an anarchist intellectual.
Absolutely. That's a skill of 20 under a stat of 60. And I have rolled an 80, so well beyond.
Yep. Okay. You can think of nothing to add to or contradict what Colonel Mustard Seed said.
Yeah. I am going to look thoughtfully at Annalias, though, and go, you also seemed like you weren't super surprised by this. I think you were assuming it was substance induced. Is this kind of thing familiar to you?
Yeah. So without boring you with the details, I've got some experience with poison. And I don't really know what it's called, but, you know, I saw somebody on YouTube that after getting bitten by cobra snakes for long enough became kind of immune to that. And that just kind of seems wise, that if you're looking to get stronger, if you're looking to build up survivability, it just kind of seems prudent. So I've been proactive, I think they call it. Yeah, so, you know, it's not the first time I've lost some time. I think it's the first time that people have blinked out of reality, but I don't know. So this All could right. be drugs?
Feel free to roll anarchist, intellectual, or experimental librarian, I suppose. For the listeners, experimental librarian is a custom skill that Nia has that reflects Niad's skill at organizing, logistics, recall, etc., as it relates to operating his library. He has no formal training per se, but has sought information and advice on the subject for many years, and has also developed his own idiosyncrasies and preferences, quite apart from the way things are usually done, and is very hands-on.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and roll Experimental Librarian since it's a full 15 points higher than Anarchist Intellectual is, if I have sure. that option. All right, well, it is not underneath my Experimental Librarian skill, but a 50 is below my Mind skill of 60.
So, one of the books that you recently added to your catalog, as it were, mm-hmm. is a book called The Poison King about Mithridates. So you have some idea of the particular breed of insanity that Annalias is talking about.
Okay. Yeah, I sort of squint, partially remembering it, and say somewhat hesitantly, so like, Mithridatism, is that the word?
Probably.
I nod sagely. I get you. Well, if you're ever looking for like rehab or something, I know some folks.
No, it's not an addiction. I could stop any time. That sounds stupid. Yeah, no, it's not primarily drugs. It's poisons, and sure, yeah, drugs are in the mix, but only if, you know, that's going to challenge my system in some way.
All right. Well, glad to have you along. Seems like a real useful perspective for our current situation.
Yeah, I'll have to ask you more questions if you appear in more of my dreams, but for now I suggest we get moving. I want to figure out this whole name thing before I wake up. I often find that dreams are like trying to drink a river. You can't, but sometimes you're lucky enough to get sated.
Now that is definitely a lyric.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think you're right.
You are a true wordsmith. I mean, I was just going to say that the best way out is sometimes in, but that's why I'm not in a band.
I'll just add, or through.
So you're on the 18th floor of an office tower.
Did I manage to locate like a stairwell in my initial search, or were you just like poking around?
You got two offices all right, over.
Fair enough. I'm going to suggest we look for a stairwell and that we stick together. And with some trepidation, I'm going to check and see if I have my regular cell phone and if it's working.
Yeah, both.
Yeah, okay. So I am going to pull up the number for Carrie. Sort of a on again, off again relationship of mine who's still actively touring, and just shoot her a text that says more or less like, "Hey, sorry to bother. I know you're on tour. Is there any chance you're anywhere near San Cayetan?" And then send that, and then pause, and then send, "No big deal if not. Don't worry about it." And send that.
5 seconds after you send the second text. Uh-huh. So what's actually happening? Because you don't actually downplay things unless there's problems. And no, we're in near New Cherbourg for the next week.
Think about it for a moment. Text back. "Cool, no worries. We're on an adventure?" ? And then a second text after that says, got roped into something, gonna be in Senkaiten for a little while. Hope the tour goes well.
Thanks. Keep me posted on your adventure.
Put in a thumbs up emoji.
The is in the text.
Yeah. Going to put in a thumbs up emoji, look at it for a second, delete it, and then replace it with "will do!" !
Three thumbs up emoji are the response.
Nod to myself as though this went exactly according to plan and put my phone away. While I've been texting, I've been following everybody else, hopefully to the stairwell. We'll see what happened, I guess.
Yeah, so who, if anyone, is taking a lead?
I don't mind.
Yeah, it sounds kind of like Danny already is trying to. You get to a door that opens outward with a distinct disengagement of a magnet. On the other side, there is a card reader. So if you go out, you may not be coming back in, absent application of force to door.
Propping it open.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Also that, yes.
I'm probably finding a phone to prop it open with just out of spite.
It does not ring.
Thank God. or whoever the hell was calling.
They just wanted help.
Wrong number.
We don't have any of that here.
There is an elevator. It opens out into, you know, this is an office building, semi-public space, therefore rather nicer than the actual workspaces for non-office holders. And off to one side is a sign for the men's bathroom. Off to another side, signs for women's bathroom. The other two paths leading to different door, you know, magnetized doors, all accessing what appears to be the same large law firm, ex-large law firm, indicate that there are stairwells as well. So you have a choice between attempting elevators and attempting stairs.
I don't trust the elevators.
Yeah, speaking only for myself, definitely do not trust the elevators.
I could use some more cardio.
Cool.
Stairs will give me a chance to look at the walls more. So, yeah, I approve.
What are you going to be looking at the walls for?
I'll know when I see it.
Thank you, Justice Stewart.
The walls are pornography. Got it. Okay. That's a good
band
name,
that was
actually
a brief phase. The walls are pornography.
So you troop down the stairs. There is nothing untoward about the walls or the stairs or the stairwell. It smells old, not in like a decay or like a dirty sense, just like people have not walked down these stairs in a long time. You all traipse 18 floors down, where it exits into a little room, not, you know, sort of an antechamber type thing before it lets out into like the elevator lobby. And you're at the base of an office tower in the midst of a dead business district in a tech bust town. There's an empty Starbucks across the way.
I glare at the empty Starbucks as though it has offended me personally.
It can't hurt you now.
I thought that about the phone, too.
Are there any
sounds? I nod sagely and seriously.
You hear distant traffic. The ocean. And some birds.
I will mostly look to Danny / Raven.
I suppose for a bit of a better sense of geography, you are most of the way down one of San Cayetan's major hills. There are, as with so many other cities that claim this distinction, 7 of them. And you are relatively close to a bay, but not like smell the salt close. It'd probably be a half mile walk. There are subterranean line, well, not subterranean, but like lines in the center of the street that indicate that cable cars do or did operate on this street. And the street lights are flashing red in the sort of way where the power has been out and not been restored yet. up the hill are yet more office towers. You can see in the distance someone coming out of one, and other notable things around you include there's a donut shop, actually, that has its lights on and its doors open for business in, you know, like the first level of a building old enough to not really be a proper skyscraper.
Is it a chain donut store, or does it seem to be like a local establishment?
Probably pretty local. It is Bob's Donuts.
If we're standing there scanning and kind of taking in the surroundings, I probably break the silence with, I think I'm going to get some donuts and some coffee. I could really use something familiar right now, and this place looks like it could use our help. Start walking toward the donut shop.
Yeah, I follow. And on the way I say, you know, I guess all we've got to go on so far is names. So sometimes in coffee shops, they say your name or ask for your name. I don't know. Names, that's all I got. Next step's yours.
Yeah, for sure. Just remember, don't give them your real name. You're using an alias, right? Then we got Mustard Seed and Raven and Aaron. Right? Everybody straight?
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Yeah. Cool. All right.
Yes, good. Of course. I'm already following automatically, as I tend to do when you do something practical and I'm thinking about something else.
Yeah, heading toward the donut shop and trying to project a confidence that I do not have, having never been translocated before.
There's a middle-aged dude and a teenage-looking girl. They appear... You're 80% sure they're related based on body language and a conversation you can't quite hear as you walk in. They both look up in a little bit of surprise, but you know, there's a modest selection of donuts, and they actually have an espresso machine.
Excellent. What's the kolache situation?
Sorry?
What's the kolache situation?
I will admit to not being familiar with kolache.
Basically, a sausage with dough wrapped around it.
Hmm.
But like...
Yeah, they have that in like a warm case, like with some spanakopita as well.
I'm going to wave as affably as I can and ask them to they said it was in a warm case, so they won't need to microwave it. Ask for a kolache and chocolate frosted donut and whatever their basic coffee is, and try to make a little bit of small talk if they're amenable. Leave them alone if they're not.
Sure. First question is, how can we address the order?
Aaron?
Good choice.
That's what they say?
Yeah.
Which one?
The teenager.
Give a slight start, but try to roll with it. I would like, if I can, to make use of one of my skills here, I'd like to roll my charm skill, which is don't talk to cops.
Which is another fine name. Yeah.
Good name.
It's a soul skill, my soul descriptor being live hardcore. So my soul is 70, my don't talk to cops is 20, so I'm trying to get under 20, but maybe won't completely flub it if I get under a 70.
Mm-hmm.
Oh no. A 55, so it matched whatever it is between my skill and my stat.
Okay. The teenager starts talking actually about the poem.
I do my best to not look alarmed.
Ah. I mean, it's just, you know, she very much appreciates the poem and, like, its themes about saints and murder.
Mm-hmm.
Phrasing it quite like that gets her a pointed look from her coworker, sort of a don't weird out the customers kid. But sees that you're also a little bit into the discussion and gives you similarly a don't flirt with the workers, dude, look. So
If I catch that look, I back off very quickly.
All right.
But otherwise, take my order and gesture to my companions and say, like, long as they keep it reasonable, I can cover for them too. I can pay for theirs.
Cool, what you want? Looks at the next person in line.
A reasonable number of buttermilk bars, please.
We'll say 2 is reasonable.
Yes, it is.
Anything to drink?
No.
Okay. Turns to look at the next.
Do I see a name tag on either of their lapels?
No.
Yeah, so I would like half a dozen donuts. Are you Bob? I saw the sign out front.
You must be new here.
No, I'm Annalias. He says charming.
You get the most flat, dead, unamused look in response. Feel free to roll Pure Soul, which is your charm.
86.
Okay, yeah, no, that's about right. Uh-huh. Entertainingly, Nick's character's soul descriptor is immune to propaganda. You are not, however, charming with these inquiries into names. Yeah, who we addressing the order to? And what donuts? Half a dozen doesn't really give me much to work with other than a number.
Different kinds. I like to mix it up a little bit. Spice,
are
variety,
you
spice.
To
up
anything?
No, I try not to be. And if I am, bring it.
You get a worried look in response, but, like, grudgingly, you can tell that you are given 6 of the donuts that they will not otherwise sell today.
Uh-huh.
New? Looking at Danny.
Black coffee, please, and chocolate donut holes, if you have them, half dozen.
Dark
I would like to
hair,
use,
sure.
As I use, as I place this order, I want to use Aura Sight on both of them.
Okay. Roll it.
Man, 99.
Ooh.
Does that raise Aura Sight by 1?
It does.
Adam's going to be irked at this, but I'm running the game,
yeah.
So whatever.
I'm not the GM. Take it away.
The people, which is normally what you get for Aura Sight, you only get people and living things, are people. They sure have auras. Those are 100% auras. But then you check out the mirror.
Oh, no.
Because, you know, they're sort of a, like, wall-length mirror, not, like, floor-to-ceiling, but, like, edge of one wall to edge of the other, like, right under the menu. And you see yourselves in it as well, and you all sure have auras. My, aren't they a little fucked up? And then outside, you see the auras of hundreds of business people, all sort of walking around like it was, well, late afternoon on a Tuesday, and they were getting back to their office from getting coffee or a late lunch or whatever. And none of them quite have that same electric shade of blue that the guy that you met in The Matrix had, but it all sort of looks to be a similar style of binding. And one by one, they all turn to look at you.
I'm guessing I'm rolling for a natural.
It seems like a reasonable idea there, yeah.
Ooh,
you are not bothered in the least. Take a hardened notch. when you glance back at the mirror, nothing's there except the reflection.
I still turn to briefly look over my shoulder just to confirm and look back at the two. And
your order's already up?
Oh, fantastic. Looks good, I say, remembering the caution about fey rules. I put a tip, a cash tip, if there's a jar.
There is.
And I ask, where would we look for a stolen name?
If you were smart, you wouldn't.
Presume we're not smart.
Presume we have no choice.
Most nights, I don't know the schedule, I don't go there, it's ill-advised. But most nights, there's a market. The Palace of Fine Arts has a rotunda. You may want to look there.
I settle up for all of our orders.
It costs about 60% of what you expected.
Oh. I will give the rest of what I expected in tip and devour my kolache in as few bites as humanly possible.
3.
I will take my time a little bit more with the donut and coffee.
It's all quite good.
I will say as much.
They are happy you feel so.
I hold a buttermilk bar in each hand and take symmetrical bites, one from the right, one from the left, one from the right, one from the left. About halfway through, I say, aren't there rules about food with the Fae? Namely, don't? It's good, though.
George spits out.
I go back to eating the bars.
For what it's worth, we're not Fae. Like, names are just fucked up around here.
I will nod as though this is common knowledge.
Do you know an Arthur?
Not so as I could identify him for you. Maybe.
In what way precisely are names fucked up around here?
Roll charm.
I shall.
Notably, for the listeners, it is human-ish.
That is my particular charm. 49.
Okay. So above the skill, below the stat, you get a considering look. The thing about giving your name is that it can be taken.
I get a considering look on my face, and if there's a long enough silence for me to ask in, like, you know, some, if they give me space to ask, and adopting, like, a very thoughtful look kind of up toward the ceiling, be like, if when you give your name, it can be taken, is the same true of your pronouns?
The teenager responds, only if someone wants them.
That point. Makes sense. Hadn't thought of it that way. Thanks.
Sure.
Pronouns
thing.
Are more like a sourdough starter. Given, but also kept.
Having never baked anything in my life, I nod sagely as though I understand completely.
I have buttermilk on the brain, so...
And in your hands.
And in your That's mouth. By this time, I'm almost certainly finished with my donut and finishing up my coffee.
Mm. I wait until everyone's finished before gesturing to the street outside and saying, I saw hundreds of auras there. I wonder if they had their name stolen.
I look at you.
Nah, they're older than the problem.
Okay, new plan. I start to look at Raven, and then I interrupt myself to look back at the speaker of those particular words.
That was the teenager. Okay. She's already, I think, decided that you're fun to, like, mess with. Mm-hmm.
I look at her, I blink twice slowly. So this name's problem is widespread, then?
Mostly I think it's limited to the city.
Good to know. Good to know.
I don't really get out much. She sort of jerks a nod at her coworker. But yeah, no, it's even instantiated in schools.
Oh.
Many of this city's problems can be traced to a single company. I glare in the general direction of the Starbucks. Is that true of the name problem?
Couldn't tell you. Sorry.
That's fine. You make excellent donuts. I wouldn't ask for more.
Thank you. He actually is in charge of the kitchen.
Thank you.
You get sort of a curt, like,
yeah,
one-off wave.
We should probably be going, but this has been both delicious and informative.
You both have been very helpful.
Have a nice day.
You as well.
You too.
Walk outside.
You too. I'm sucking sugar off my fingers, so it sounds like that.
You go outside.
Yeah, we're back on the sidewalk. And
at the base of a foothill. Well, a hill.
I guess I pull up my maps app and try to figure out where the... Was it Palace of...
Fine Arts.
Is in relation to where we are now.
It is similarly on the, not quite on the waterfront, but like a third of the clock away from where you are currently.
Okay.
As you are doing so, a cable car rolls by uphill. There is no one on it.
point of clarity, is there a driver?
There is no one on it.
Does it stop?
Do you make any indication that you might want to get onto a cable car?
I certainly don't, but I can only speak for myself.
I do.
Okay. You make a sort of hailing a taxi gesture, and the cable car stops.
I give Danny a level look.
What? The things? I can't drive.
I know. Do we know where this cable car is going?
The thing about cable cars is that they are attached to cables that go in straight lines.
Sure.
Do the cables lead where we're trying to go, roughly?
I mean, they go directly uphill, which is more toward than away from, but, you know, at sort of a bit of an angle.
Did the door open?
So a cable car, if for those of you who have not been to San Francisco,
like me,
is a conveyance that runs up and down one street at approximately 9 3/4 miles an hour, and has mostly outdoor seating, although there is an indoor compartment as well. It is narrower, certainly, than a bus. It tends to stop at intersections when somebody indicates that they would like to embark or disembark.
They're weirdly solid state. Not much opens or closes.
Right.
I'm already getting on
the mechanism of clamping onto the permanently running cable or unclamping from it.
I'm already getting on and saying, this is probably not a good idea.
I sigh and follow you onto the cable car.
I do too. George steps up.
There is a sort of ticket device that indicates that fare is approximately outrageous because it's for tourists mostly.
I look at Benjamin and say in an extremely neutral tone, I bought the donuts.
Approximately outrageous. Is it more than I have?
Not knowing how much you have, I will give the information that in like 1998, it was $5.
Yeah, I'm going to say it doesn't clean me out. I'm already regretting my choice more than perhaps I already was, but I pay the fare.
Okay. The machine plops out 4 tickets of the sort that the origamily inclined could easily fold up into like a frog or something.
It's a frog before we've sat down.
Excellent. It's got just the right shape so that there's enough stiffness to like actually like press down on the frog's butt and have it actually like hop.
Perfect.
The cable car continues uphill. It passes a wide array of relatively architecturally well-known San Cajetan buildings. Eventually crests the hill. There is a hotel. There's a couple of presumably quite high-end apartment buildings. 2 hotels, I misspoke a moment ago. A park, a very old building with the letters PUC on the door that has no further explanation, and a Gothic cathedral up at the top. of this hill.
While we're riding, I'm keeping an eye on my maps app to see like where we need to get off to go to the Palace of the Fine Arts. But otherwise, I am just kind of observing the scenery.
Sure.
With interest.
So you can get off on the downhill slope and take a different cable car. Your tickets will be viable for that. That would take you down to Fisherman's Wharf, and then you'd have to walk a ways, or you could get onto a streetcar, which is a different thing from a cable car. Right. It's what everyone actually thinks of when I said cable car, but for the San Francisco of it all. Mm-hmm. Or you could get a bus from any of like 8 different places that would eventually take you towards the marina and eventually the Palace of Fine Arts.
Before we decide that, the church, the Gothic cathedral, you said. One of the locations mentioned in the documents I hungrily perused was a church, but you said it was a church more in the sense of like church in the wild. Am I remembering that right?
Now I have to remember my exact phrasing, and I don't think I can.
I think you said...
I just wrote down a church, which is not sufficiently helpful.
I think you said in a geographical sense initially.
A church in a geographical sense. That makes sense. Okay. Yes, that is what you said. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. No further questions, Your Honor.
So I guess, absent any input from my compatriots, I will try to chart out like the most like efficient route to the Palace of Fine Arts, not necessarily in the sense of time, but like in the sense of having to do and pay for things.
I mean, you have cable car tickets.
Right.
The internet indicates to you that there is a general impression that there should be cable car operators and that they do often exercise discretion as to whether or not someone is a local in terms of whether or not to charge them. But also that you have the tickets and therefore the transfer will accrue no further charges. Mm-hmm. They do not interact with other forms of public transit in San Cayetan. So you'd be able to get the transfer, go over a different hill sort of in an orthogonal direction and get down toward a part of the waterfront closer to the Palace of Fine Arts. And then it would be a good little walk to get there.
Okay. This doesn't seem like a problem for me. I will kind of coach my compatriots.
That, and you do have some hours yet before a night market might be properly termed a night market.
Indeed, yeah. Not in any particular hurry.
And anyone who feels like can roll a general education or a mind or similar, feel free to pick among those and declare.
All right. I just rolled, I know stuff, and I rolled a 96, okay. So I think I don't.
Yeah, no, I don't think you do know stuff.
I think I must have gone through the core curriculum because I rolled for general education and I got a 70.
I'm also rolling for general education. I got an 18.
Okay, so that is over your skill, under your stat. It occurs to you that a night market, discussing a problem of names, might not be officially sanctioned or authorized.
Mm-hmm. I would like to take this series of roles in a supernatural direction. So it hasn't exactly come up, but I, Mia, am an anarcho-bibliomancer. Yes. I have book powers.
You sure do.
And the language of the sort of magical domain of bibliomancy, it is concerned with the power of knowledge. It is powerful magic for finding things out, for illuminating or obscuring the facts of something, and for influencing events that are knowledge dependent. So what I would like to do is spend one minor charge. I'm going to roll my bibliomancy skill in just a moment. For let me check my notes, which is described as a bibliomancer has a magical connection to his library and may spend a minor charge to retrieve any information contained within its books. This spell allows for total photographic recall of any piece of information provided there is a book that contains it within its library. So I am going to spend an additional minor charge here, so two total, to search all the works of my library for a composite of all information contained therein on a single subject, that knowledge being night markets.
Okay.
Does that sound amenable?
Sure.
All right. So my anarcho-bibliomancy skill is 40. And it's my obsession skill, so I can flip-flop those dice. So, I rolled a 16.
Cool. That is a success.
Indeed. Let me subtract those two minor charges.
You feel the effort of connecting to your library, and you know this to be that, given that you are at such a distance from it, it feels, you feel the direction that it is going and then coming back. It's fairly quick. It does not take much time. You sort of meditate on the text from your library that is in your hands. I mean the terms and conditions on the ticket. And you feel a flurry of scenes from historical and fantasy novels, as well as sort of some that whiz by almost relevant of goblin markets. Also, various sort of encyclopedia entries of major cities having night markets, usually seasonal, often starting after dark, sometimes unauthorized or underground or otherwise unsanctioned. These last often require a shibboleth to enter, but not always. Many times, behavior as if you are an authority or, well, cop is likely sufficient to get you removed. Is there anything specific that you're looking for?
Etiquette.
Don't be a cop.
Easy
at
enough.
Least for the unsanctioned ones. You know, it's flea market's advanced version, I suppose.
Weirdly useful.
Is sort of the vibe.
So I probably spend a decent chunk of the first leg of our cable car ride just kind of processing this information.
Zoned
quietly.
Out. Yes. It's probably 20-ish minutes to get up the hill, over the hill, and sufficiently down the hill that you arrive at an intersection where there is that same cable laid into the street. It's got sort of a metal cover with like a 2-inch opening that you can see just running up the street in the same way that it does ahead and behind you here.
Yeah, so as necessary to inch our way closer to this night market of the Palace of Fine Arts, I direct my comrades in the transport.
Sure, and you indicate that you are interested in disembarking and the cable car with a ding stops in the center of the intersection. And you realize that you haven't seen a car.
Given what I know about what has gone on in Senkaitan for the last few years, I'm not super surprised, but I can't speak for anyone else.
Mm. You are now in a part of town that is more residential, less business or commercial. You haven't really been through any sort of industrial anything anywhere. But this is more residential. You have seen people walking around, but... Yeah.
I was going to ask, is it less dead because less residential? More signs of life?
Yeah, you've seen people walking around. There's, you know, corner stores, and like you've passed a major grocery store with its lights on and like so on.
Does the cable car we're transferring to have anyone on it?
You have about 10 minutes to wait. And yeah, there's a driver and three passengers on it.
That's reassuring.
They take a look at your ticket and just nod.
I make my ticket hop.
This gets...
That got me.
An amused sort of... patient look from the driver. Yeah, kids from the school have a tendency to fold them up like that.
Aww.
You from here? The driver nods at the church up there, or the cathedral up the hill, when discussing the school.
I am already seated next to somebody who is already on the cable car. So I am unaware of this. Take it away, Drew.
I'm not from here. First time, actually.
Huh. Small world, then.
Small and full of wondrous things. I hop it again.
The driver huffs a laugh and, you know, lets you go about your business.
They look at all of them with aura sight.
Okay, roll it.
So, 53. But that's under my soul skill.
It is. Once again, you see the auras of everyone in the car. They all look reasonably normal. There's a woman sitting next to Nia who has some of the same sort of striations or cross-hatching to her aura that Nia has. You don't know if it signifies anything, but it's there. You do also see four of those same outlines sitting placidly in seats on the cable car. They do not acknowledge you.
I would love to roll Don't Talk to Cops to talk to the person I'm selecting to sitting next to.
Roll Don't Talk to Cops.
Let's see. My Don't Talk to Cops skill is 20. One, but I rolled a 28, which is lower than my soul, but higher than my skill.
Yeah. Your attempts at sort of introductory small talk are politely rebuffed. There isn't really hostility, but she does take out a book and start reading in somewhat like... short order.
Sure. I take a hint, I note what book she's reading, and I pull a book out of my go bag to read.
It is Terry Pratchett's The Shepherd's Crown.
Aww. I silently approve. And I am probably reading like let's see. My go bag description includes a traveling library for charges. So let's say I am reading, like, for the heck of it, like a David Graeber history.
Sure. To the degree that you were hoping to provoke a reaction with your choice of book, you do not get one.
That's fine. I have the pleasure of reading David Graeber.
Sure.
This is certainly a book that I have read before.
Yeah. George or Danny, mm-hmm. up to anything?
Yeah, I feel like there's no one here that's more interesting than the people that I arrived with, so I sit next to Danny and just kind of strike up a conversation saying, how cool was it that that last car was automated?
It was cool, I guess, I say, not wanting to burst his bubble.
Yeah, I mean, I've never been before, and this is just blowing my mind. Seems it's still a little buggy. Seems like it stopped in the middle of an intersection. It seems a little dangerous to me, but, you know, new technology, gonna expect some bugs.
I also don't really see a lot of cars in dreams.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still thinking that we're poisoned, but, you know, dream, that works too.
Ominous roll was ominous.
So
carry on.
Like,
don't mind the world.
Have you known Mustard Seed since his slug jump days? How like far do you go back?
Mustard Seed was likely not in the slug jump. Aran was.
Oh, I see. Then I will reverse that and ask the appropriate question.
Did I?
Almost certainly not.
Yeah, I only know like back three, right?
Yeah, I was gonna say, yeah. Slug Jump formed in like 1996.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so I reiterate the fact that I was still a kid back then, so I knew, and I list off the three bands prior. That I know of.
Yeah. Gosh, that's wild.
For what it's worth, the bands that Danny knows of is Midnight Serpents, Wintertooth, and Death Snakes.
Okay. I do not know Thunder Sludge or Slug Jump.
Indeed not.
But I wanted to say them out loud.
That's wild. What was your inspiration for Anarchy Tooth?
I was just thinking about how the government often grinds us up in their teeth, you know, and how nice it would be to bite back against the jowls that threaten to bite us.
God, I love that. I mean, what are the chances of running into, like, the band? It's it's pretty okay to hang out with you.
It's good hanging out with you too, an alias.
Wild.
You're definitely not getting looks from the cable car driver.
I do. I have a pin on my.
Are you seated inside or outside of the cable car? I suppose.
I imagine. I don't know. Where did the gang go?
I leave this to the GM.
I'm I figured I was still by the driver being a general gadfly.
Okay.
Flat.
So then you're seated on outward facing benches at the rear of the cable car where the driver operates from.
Flashback to every time I've been pretty drunk getting on a streetcar and being convinced that the driver hates me.
Like that one time in New Orleans.
Like those several times in New Orleans.
So we're definitely not getting looks from the driver. I cast about my person for something that I could give an alias, a signature with, and then immediately realize that would be giving away my name. So stop what I was doing midway through and say, I'll give you a signature later once we're not in a situation where that might be dangerous.
Yeah, man, that's great. That's great. I mean, absolutely. So what about
not that I know you'll wake up with it, but it's a thought that counts, right? And I'm not entirely convinced that people don't remember interacting or aren't connected intrinsically somehow in some broader dream space.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's like you said in Crawfishica, in dreams, it's only thoughts that count.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a freeing thing when you really think about it, you know?
Yeah.
We're all pretty close together, right?
Oh, yeah.
I present in both hands, cupped gently, a ticket shaped like a frog, autographed with the name Mustard Seed.
Nice.
To George.
I take it reverently and try to find some way to fold it up into its, you know, without bending it and put it in my
pocket. It squishes pretty flat.
I'm studiously ignoring all of this.
Mustard Seed, can I borrow a pen?
But the driver hands you a pen.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, driver. I sign mine Raven and then draw what I think is a very evocative portrait of myself in the Raven mask on stage in my full persona.
Roll a reality check for that.
Uh, 60, which is exactly my mind stat, but above it reality sure is. Check.
Two things. One, things aren't neat enough for this to be a dream, you think? It's all a little bit messy. There's more detail than might be strictly necessary. And also, that's a pretty kick-ass iteration of your stage persona. You hand the driver back the pen, you hand the autographed ticket to Analeas.
I briefly...
Who now has three of the party's tickets.
I briefly intercept the pen and just write NF on it and then hand the pen off to the driver.
You get a nod and, you know, this is all totally normal. Mm-hmm. Totally normal. Operators of public transit have basically seen everything.
Indeed. I try to look like it's no big thing at all.
I try to look like I'm not looking for the fourth, the third autograph here.
I mean, you have now gotten them all.
Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I thought that I didn't have Orin's yet or Nia's yet.
Yeah, no, that's what the NF was, yeah, I imagine.
Gotcha.
NF was
so you are now in possession of four cable car tickets.
I thought I was signing the frog.
okay. You are in possession of three cable car tickets, two of which are signed with three signatures. And eventually, you know, cable car arrives down at its last stop. Everyone is requested to please disembark. Because the cable car has to, like, go ahead onto a friggin', like, plate thing that is how it turns around. And, yeah, you are at the sort of wharf, edge of the wharf area, and then on one side, on the other side, there are some vast, like, fields, sort of public spaces, blessedly free of geese, there are some folks flying kites. There are several, like, distinct boat clubs worth of boats. Like, you know, little sailboaty thingies. Not, like, giant yachts or whatever. But, you know, it's obviously boats that cost money, both for having in the berth and for buying and for maintaining and so on. you are pretty sure that everything you're standing on here is landfill, in a city known for earthquakes.
I consult my phone to see where we need to go to arrive at the rotunda of the Palace of Fine Arts and orient myself in that direction.
Parallel to where the fields go, parallel to the shoreline, parallel to the very nice houses across the boulevard.
I unaccountably think about crabs for a moment, and then...
No, that's the other direction.
And then I...
Also, worth noting, dear listeners, carcinization is not spontaneous.
I reassure myself with that thought.
For no reason in particular, I mutter the word carcinization out loud.
You find yourself looking up websites about carcinization, which studiously assure you that it is not spontaneous.
But we're all on our way. Gradually.
It's a question of when, not if.
I orient myself towards the Palace of Fine Arts and gesture my companions to follow me in that direction. Sure. And set off.
Yeah, you are heading sort of northwestish. Mm-hmm. You can tell because the sun is beginning to set sort of at an angle. You can see a bridge out of the city. You can see a couple of islands in the bay. The weather's pretty lovely, honestly. And it's probably a 40-minute walk. You may be actually hungry by the time you get toward the Palace of Fine Arts.
Mm-hmm.
There are... The property value seems to diminish as you get toward that area of town, partly because the water sort of recedes off in one direction and you get more coming into the city traffic and older, somewhat run-down motels, gas stations lining the major throughfares for people getting off the highway and so on. And, you know, various restaurants of different intervals of quality, let's say.
All right. So I put away my anarchist theory reading and usher everybody off of the cable car in the direction of the Palace of Fine Arts. And we start walking as a group in that direction, provided that everybody agrees to come with me in this mm-hmm. moment.
I think you have officially obtained Mother Duck status.
As you know, I often say, quack, quack.
You're always saying yeah. that.
Every day. And so we move on foot in the direction of the Palace of Fine Arts. And I think if there's at any point like three consecutive moments of silence, I address myself to Annalias.
Mm-hmm.
And just sort of very casually ask, so you're a fan?
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Awesome. We don't have many. What drew you in?
I don't know. It's just... there's something transcendent about what you do. You know, on the surface level, you know, it's hypnotic, it's structured when it needs to be, and yet you really know how to kind of disrupt the pattern that makes the listener come to attention, makes the listener wake up out of the trance that you've put them in and invites them into a next level of trance. It's like a
we try. Spiral. We try to nest the trances. Yes.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely, and that comes through. You know, that comes through in, gosh, the last one that I was listening to is "Bring Me the Futures," and it was just kind of like the, gosh, some kind of a multi-tiered something or other, like those pyramids they have in South America that are just different, except you just never quite reach the peak. It's always just over the next horizon.
Didn't I say when we were recording that one that we were making Zigger art?
I nod,
God damn it,
tolerantly.
Danny, you seem to be the least invested in this phase of the conversation. Roll notice.
Oh boy. '77. The dice. Hey. I don't know if they really like me or really hate me today.
Your notice so goes up by
they
one.
Love a good they love a good yarn.
Your yeah, notice goes go, up yeah. by one.
Uh-huh.
And all around you, those same... Except, no, they're blue-lined this time. They're all blue-lined outlines of figures. And they're all on phones. And they're all looking at you. Like, you can see us. Can't you help us? And then they all turn as one to look at the space between... No, it's not just the space between two houses anymore. There's a store there.
I'm just going to roll a natural before we get to the store thing.
I'll show myself out of reality.
31.
Cool. You are less perturbed by this than you should be.
Well said.
Let's get those hardened stats.
Yep.
I point at the store.
I break off what I was saying and look.
Well, not even noticing that, I look back at all of the blue line figures as though they can give some indication. Figures? Oh, yeah, they're not there anymore. I look back to make sure there still is, in fact, a store there.
Oh, yeah, no. Denton Lucan's traveling shop is very there.
Most excellent. I'm very excited as a player.
So you have stopped and are pointing at this?
Yes.
Okay. I will
dead in my tracks.
Slow to a stop and look at where you're pointing and then sort of give a one eyebrow raised.
It just appeared.
I guess we probably should check it out. That seems significant, right?
Yeah. It's like a dream sign. What wills itself into existence wills itself into significance, too.
Well said. I look a little bit begrudging, but respectful.
You cross the boulevard. It's several lanes in each direction. There is a little bit of traffic, but... not enough to be an impediment to a determined pedestrian. And you approach the shop, which looks decades out of place between these two houses. Never mind the gap between residential and commercial. It very much has sort of an Eastern Bloc cold front vibe to it, or cold front, Cold War vibe to it. And as you approach, the door opens and a bell dings, obviously sort of connected in the way that old shops have to announce that. And an elderly gentleman with a cane and an air that is somewhere between entitled to the world and angry at it, steps out, sees you approaching, gives a venomous glare over George's shoulder, and turns and walks away.
Away.
Roll notice.
Okay.
Anyone who cares to.
Okay.
I care.
49.
92. Wow.
82.
Okay, so 49 for me is between my notice of 15 and my mind of 60.
The old man is not using his cane to walk, mm-hmm. like as a mobility aid. Mm-hmm. Those of you who rolled above your stats don't notice anything in particular. I suspect that Benjamin is intrigued by the appearance of shelves upon shelves of stuff without necessarily any obvious organizational structure to it. And Dan,
I feel
is
what
probably
a beaver feels when a beaver sees loose sticks.
Danny is distracted by, where did all those people, auras, hallucinations, dreams, where did all those dreams go? And Nick, what did you roll for?
10 for keep two eyes out.
Okay. Yeah, no, that dude definitely does not rely on his stick for walking. You actually think that... I'm going to be mean and say you need to roll mind.
All right. 90.
Okay. Yep. There's something weird about the cane.
Mm-hmm.
It's best you can tell.
Yeah.
You don't know what it is. But yeah, you go into the shop?
Yeah. Yeah, not knowing what it is doesn't trouble George. All canes are weird.
Yeah, so I think we probably all enter the shop.
Mm-hmm.
It is worth noting, dear listeners, that it is not actually the opinion of the Dice Punks that mobility aids are weird.
Yes, very good clarification.
Appreciate George's it. Opinions do not reflect those of the management or the editorial staff.
So yeah, it's a store,
mm-hmm.
sort of, mm-hmm. it's a warehouse full of stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you think it's bigger on the inside?
God damn it.
Do you look around? Do you try to find the proprietor?
Like, yeah, that was what I was going to say, is I'm looking for the man with the cane.
Oh, no. He left the shop and walked down the sidewalk.
Either we're here somehow, or we should pursue him.
I don't know. He's probably just a customer, right? Let's shout for the store owner. George says, hello?
Hello?
Cool. So you say hello as you sort of walk forward through more shelves than perhaps should be there. And there are really just a wide array of things. Offhand, you see... one roller skate, you see some rebar, you see several framed pieces of art, dozens of books, you see a really, really tawdry, like, someone ordered this off of, like, out of a catalog, not even the internet, like, glitter-covered, cheap-looking dragon statue. It's got a wizard with a little, like, crystal ball at the foot of it.
I think it looks really cool, though.
Ah, good, yes. And that is all the farther that I will attempt of that, because Denton Lucan has, as has been established elsewhere, a nebulous and frequently shifting but never quite accurate Eastern European accent. Welcome to my shop. You see a very old man in a somewhat tattered suit at, you know, behind a counter that has an immense book open on a slight, like one of those little like book rest things that keeps it at an angle. If this book were closed, it might be 2 feet thick.
The book snaps me out of what I was doing, which was mentally rearranging all of the objects. The rebar under S for structure, the art under I for imagination food, the glittery, kitschy piece of art under D for, I mean, R for Raven.
Yes, well, welcome. How can I help you? What are you looking for? My name is Denton Lucan. And that is where we will end our session. You're welcome,
it
Adam.
It is so weird and yet so satisfying to see characters that I invented in 2009 coming back in 2033. Oh,
I have definitely worked to weave in aspects of both of those campaigns to this thing. So
absolutely. Well, and for our listeners, right, like it's really interesting because they don't need any of that context, but I have all of the context and it it is fun.
You
I enjoy
do.
It.
This is
that's
gift.
As good a teaser as one could ask for the peaks right there.
XP awards.
Thank you. Everyone gets two experience.
Yeah.
The way that experience works in Unknown Armies for players and listeners is that upgrading a stat costs two XP. Upgrading a skill costs one XP. Getting a new skill costs 10 XP, but you get it at 10. With that, dear listeners, this is the end of the first of N sessions of Unknown Armies. Thank you for listening, and say goodbye to the kind folks at home, players.
Well, as we often say, thanks for listening. And, you know, if your friends are weirdly comfortable with a weird situation, just go along with it. What's the worst that could happen?
Thanks for listening. And, oh, the worst that can happen is very bad.
We appreciate you. And to end on a slightly lighter note than that, just remember that all that we see or seem is but a dream within a dream.
Thank you so much for spending time with us. It's great to go on adventures with you.
And as the poet once said, and now we're grown-up orphans that never knew their names. We don't belong to no one. That's a shame.
Thank you for tuning in, dear listeners, and stick around through the admin stuff to hear Drew do a podcast intro with a shocking admission in it. The songs in this episode, Theme of the Dice Punks and its acoustic version, were written and recorded by Benjamin Demos himself, Drew. Cover art and editing was done by Joanne, who's appeared on the podcast now and again. Check out her work around the internet, where she goes by Anything Sews. Site design and graphics for DicePunks.com are by Robin, the player behind the dreamy Danny. Unknown Armies 2nd Edition was created by Greg Stolze and John Tweet. All three editions can be found at atlas-games.com. Links to the system and authors can be found on the Punk Grimoire section of our website, dicepunks.com. Thanks so much for listening. If you liked what you heard, that's reward enough on its own, but if you're so inclined, you can help us out by rating and reviewing us wherever you listen to us, telling your friends who you think would like us to give us a listen, and even by heading over to our Patreon at patreon.com/dicepunks. We have fun rewards available to backers, including patron-only Discord, and access to the Dice Peaks after show for episodes 1 and following. Regardless, we hope you'll tune in again, and until then, remember, subtlety is for cowards.
and welcome to Dice Punks, the only tabletop role-playing podcast that claims direct responsibility for the death of Henry Kissinger.